Quiet, please.
Ladies and gentlemen.
You ready for the big show?
In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
Lars. This is the Lars Larson Show.
President Trump is one fat-ass president. He secured the border at a level we've never seen before.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
For our country and for our children, the best is yet to come.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
He is an existential threat to democracy.
Here's your host.
Quiet, please.
Lars Larson.
It's the country over the party on this. I can't ever support that kind of tactic to hold our government as a hostage.
That is John Fetterman, member of the United States Senate. He's one of the eight that broke ranks with the rest of the party and said, I am voting to end this government shutdown. Now 42 days and the longest government shutdown in American history. Glad to be with you and always glad to take your calls. And if you want to jump into what we call the best conversation in talk journalism, it's right here every day at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. And if you're a naysayer, maybe you're one of those Democrats who thinks that the Democrats should have held the line and kept the country shut down, or at least the government of the country shut down, which now has its tentacles out into so many parts of American life that when the federal government shuts down, some people don't notice. But an awful lot of people are directly affected by what happened. Now, as much as I think our federal government should be a whole lot smaller than it currently is, the way to get there is not by shutting the whole operation down. So the government has not ended its shutdown yet. It still has yet to go to the House. Then it has to be approved. Then it has to go to the president's desk. Then it has to be signed into law and all of the rest of that razzmatazz. And then they're going to have to start calling people back. So understand that even though the deal has been cut, because eight Democrats, like John Fetterman, saw the light of day and said, we can't let this go on any longer, even to the point where Fetterman is now using the kind of language that people like me have used, that what the Democrats did was they took America hostage, and then they persuaded all their friends in the cartel legacy media to tell the American public why this is the Republicans shutting the country down. And then even Democrats and left-wing news commentators like Jake Tapper at CNN had to finally admit, well, if we judge this based on the standards we've looked at other government shutdowns, this is the government shutdown of the Democrats, not of the Republicans. And why is that significant? Because the Republicans walked in and said, we want to have a status quo budget. We can vote on other matters like expansion of subsidies for Obamacare and that sort of thing. And I'll get to that as well. But we can have those discussions later on. But for right now, let's get the government back in operation. The Republicans offered up a clean CR, as they call it on Capitol Hill, a status quo budget. And what do the Democrats say? No, we will hold the country hostage. We demand that you give us about $1.4 trillion in new government spending. And they were demanding it of a country that infamously now has $38 trillion in debt. And that debt is getting bigger by almost $2 trillion every year. That has to end, or the entire country will economically go over the edge of a cliff. Our debts will become so big, they will eclipse everything else, including just paying the interest on the debt. Right now, the cost of that is about $1 trillion every year. But if you want to join the conversation, and I'm glad to take naysayers on this, somebody wants to make the case that the Democrats were right to shunt the country down, or that it was the Republicans that actually did it by offering a clean CR while the Democrats were saying, no, we've got to spend more money. And some of that money they wanted to spend was on illegal aliens. And that was an issue as well. And to a large extent, the legacy cartel media lied for the Democrats. They said, no, the government is not covering the health insurance costs of illegals. Yes, they are. And no, the government is being shut down by the Republicans who refuse to what? Extend Obamacare subsidies. These were expansions of Obamacare subsidies that only went into effect about 2.5 years ago. And they were due to end by law on December 31st of this year. In other words, everybody knew, including the Democrats who voted in those expanded subsidies, they knew the subsidies went out of existence on New Year's Eve of this year. just less than 2 months from now. So what did they say? We want to have them expanded. And they tried to tell a bunch of lies. And I'm going to give you one of the biggest lies they told. We'll get to Medicaid later on. But when it comes to Obamacare subsidies, we already have a country that has seen its health care costs explode after and because of the passage of Obamacare. I'll remind you again, not a single Republican member of the House of Representatives voted for that travesty. Not a single Republican member of the U.S. Senate voted for Obamacare. But Obamacare was jammed through by Barack Hussein Obama as one of his signature accomplishments. And what did it do? It told you, if you like your doctor, you can keep your doctor. A big fat lie. If you like your health plan, you can keep your health plan. Another big fat lie. It will bring down the overall cost of health care. It did not. And in fact, if you take a look, and I've looked at these, at the numbers by which health care was increasing in cost up to the point where Obamacare passed, it was going up, and it was going up way too fast. But then the minute Obamacare passed, if you take a look at what's happened to health care costs since then, health care costs have exploded since then. That is a big part of the problem. So during the pandemic and because of the pandemic, Joe Biden and his Democrat friends said, here's an excuse to dramatically increase the subsidies on Obamacare to the point where people were seeing up to 88% of their entire health insurance premium paid for by the taxpayers. Now, do you know what we're right on the verge of there? Nationalized health care. And that is exactly what the Democrats want. And if you want nationalized health care, as far as I'm concerned, you can have it, but not here in America. You want to try it out? Go to Canada. And then ask yourself why anybody in Canada with a couple of dollars in their pocket doesn't depend on their national health care systems for the big stuff. They come to the United States of America because we still have a quality health care system. They have the kind of health care system that you get when you let the same folks who run DMV, Amtrak, and the post office run your health care system. And if you want another example of that, the UK. In Great Britain, they have National Health Service, which means you're forced to go into a nationalized health care system that fails people on a regular basis. In fact, if you look at long-term survival rates for people with cancer, in America, it's great. The numbers are great. You detect it early, you treat it early, you get it taken care of, and a lot more people live. Go to Scotland and take a look at what happens there with the National Health Service. You have slow access to doctors. The doctors say, yeah, you're probably going to need some treatment for that cancer. We'll try to get you as soon as we can. I mean, it's outrageous, like the fact that in Canada, if you go to your doctor in Canada and the doctor says, I think you need to see a cardiologist, your heart has problems, we hope to get you an appointment in the next 6 months. That does not happen in America. It does happen in Canada right next door. And why? Because one of the ways the government has of saving money, in quote marks, saving money on health care, is they just say, make everybody wait. Guess what happens? A lot of the people who have to wait die while they're waiting. A lot of the other people who wait end up with a condition that they're told, yeah, if we just got to this a few months earlier, you might have lived. But we now have a government that's going back into operation, and the Democrats got shut down. They took all that risk. They shut the entire federal government down for 42 days, and they accomplished exactly nothing. Remember that a year from now when you head off to mark your ballot. Glad to have you with me on a Tuesday. I'll get your calls next. You're listening to The Lars Larson Show. Hey, if you...
People always ask Lars if he wants to run for public office, like president.
Do you know how much power I'd have to give up to be president?
This is the Lars Larson Show.
That makes a lot of sense. A lot of nonsense.
Right. You're bloody well right. You know you got a right to sit.
This is the Northwest Nonsense.
How much longer do we have to sit for this nonsense?
That great moment every day where Lars brings you the cold, hard facts without any liberal wokeness from the Daily Dead fish wrapper or mainstream media bias.
Yes, Governor Tina Kotek always claims that she is a Democrat, but her latest machinations prove that she's an enemy of democracy. The governor announced yesterday that she had finally signed a massive new tax bill passed way back in September. Kotek called it an emergency back then. Tina used an agency she controls, ODOT, to threaten citizens with loss of critical services if she didn't extort $4 billion in new taxes. Yet she delayed signing this emergency bill for almost a month and a half. The only reason for that delay, to prevent citizens from gathering signatures to refer the measure to voters. You know, democracy, with polls showing that voters would drive a stake through the heart of this giant tax ripoff. Oregon owns America's longest standing, constitutionally guaranteed right of referendum for citizens. You know, democracy, Tina, to vote down stupid stuff done by politicians like the governor and her cronies. When it comes right down to it, this double dealing Democrat doesn't actually believe in giving citizens a say. The best way to send her a message, go to notaxor.com. That's notaxor.com. Sign the petition, put it on the ballot, and then vote down those billions in new taxes. And just to pre-answer a question or a comment I know I'm going to get, because I'm getting emails about it right now. Well, Lars, thank God we're not a democracy. No, we're not a democracy. We are a representative form of government with elements of democracy. That's what we are, a constitutional republic, meaning a representative form of government. How are most decisions made at the national level or the state level? That is made through your representatives. That's the kind of system that can last. Direct democracies always fail. But does our constitutional republic have elements of democracy? It does. The right to cast a vote in elections, which, by the way, is being fought about in the Supreme Court right now, about how far after the election you can actually continue to count the ballots. You know, the usual Democrat rule, which is playing out in Seattle right now. Just keep on counting until you get the result you want. You'll get all those extra ballots. They'll come in late. And of course, everybody will say, hey, it looks like fraud to me. But since they can say you can't prove it's fraud, then they're relatively safe. Our question of the day, brought to you by Multnomah Medical Clinic. No pills, no shots, no surgery, and get better fast. Multnomah Medical Clinic. Ken Ham writes in, Lars, if you hired somebody for a job and they only did 90% of that job, wouldn't you demand a refund of 10%? The Democrats' government shutdown means taxpayers only got 90% of what they paid for this year with our taxes. Maybe less if they don't get it running immediately. Seems to me we should get a refund of 10% or whatever percentage of the year the shutdown ends up being. Actually, since the government adds late charges on past due taxes, we should add late charges for the work we didn't get and interest on the overcharge of our taxes. That 10% or whatever it turns out to be should come out of the pockets of those who voted to shut the government down, whether individually from each millionaire congressperson or the coffers of the Democrat Party. Either way, they owe us for all the services which we were charged for but did not receive. Shouldn't the Republicans step up to file the lawsuit to recover our losses? That's the question of the day. Ken, thank you very much. My favorite post today. Good morning, Lars. Morning News says that ICE is now fielding an idea to open a facility in Newport, Oregon, on the central Oregon coast. Funny part is, all they have to do is change the name of the city with one letter. From Newport to Deport, Oregon. Signed, Mark. And now today's Daily Grill.
Insane.
Are you completely insane?
Ridiculous.
They get more and more ridiculous.
Flat out dumb.
You're even dumber than I thought.
Who deserves today's Lars Grill of the Day?
Maybe you're just really, really stupid.
Presented by Oregon City Garage Door.
Ah, today's Daily Grill. What a shocker. Seattle takes a full week to count the votes in a mayor's election. Somehow New York City got it done in less than 24 hours. But Seattle, they take more than a week to count the votes. And the Democrat magically pulls ahead. As one of my emailers said, I can't believe they're still counting votes. How is that not blatant cheating? That's how we ended up with Kotek as well. I'm so sick of this garbage. Time to eliminate mail voting. No election fraud, right, Democrats? Our email of the day brought to you by Cap Concrete Coatings. Turn your garage, patio, or driveway from ugly and rough to beautiful and tough. I've seen it with my own eyes because they did it for me, and it's beautiful. Check out CapConcreteCoatings.com or call 855-CAP-THAT. Andrew writes in, Lars, the headline says it all. A 42% increase in city employee compensation in Seattle in just 3 years. And somehow people are surprised there's a $10 million hole in the budget. I'm surprised it's that small. I'll bet we could find out they lied and it's really bigger than that. I don't know about you. My income did not increase at 14% a year for the last 3 years. But wait, that's not all. This will be the gift that keeps on giving when public employees retire based on the last few years of service. Again, a 42% increase in compensation for people working for the city of Seattle in 3 years. 42% in 3 years. Yes, inflation increased, but not that much. Even Biden wasn't that bad. To your calls. It's a Tuesday. It's the Radio Northwest Network, and your phone calls and emails are welcome at 866-HEY-LARS. Our X poll today, in honor of Veterans Day, is the America of 2025 the country that the veterans of our biggest wars fought for? I would answer no to that. You can answer it any way you like. You'll find the question at Lars Larson Show and brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. I was inspired to ask it, Joel, if we have that soundbite from that veteran, I'd like to play it because this is a veteran of World War II. He's a bit older, and he was talking about the fact that he went off and fought with his buddies. Some of his buddies didn't come home. He did. But he says, this is not the country I fought for.
I am so upset that the things we did and the things we fought for and the boys that died for it, it's all gone down the drain. Our country's gone to hell in a handbasket.
And I think he's right about that. I would say, is America 2025 the country veterans of our biggest wars fought for? My answer is no. You can answer it any way you like. Let's go to a Dick. Hey, Dick, thanks for the call on the Radio Northwest Network. What's on your mind?
So, Lars, I'd like to share with your listeners that want universal government health care. My health care is through VA. It took me a year to get an MRI for a torn shoulder.
Wow.
My wife has Medicare, and it took me 3 days to find anybody that would accept her, and it ended up being a physician's assistant because I can't find a doctor that'll take Medicare.
Yep. And you know why, right?
Absolutely, I know why. They don't pay the bills.
No, what they pay is usually 60 to 70% of the bill. So $100.
Correct.
Yeah, and so what happens is doctors back in the day could take a few Medicare patients and mix them in with the full pay patients, but these days between Medicare and Medicaid and all the other costs, they can't stay in business.
I don't blame the physicians. I didn't work for free. You don't work for free. Why should they?
No, and that's exactly the way to put it. Dick, thank you very much. I appreciate the call. It's a Tuesday. It's the Radio Northwest Network, and coming up next, will voters get a chance to have a say about Governor Kotek's new tax and vehicle taxes? We'll talk about that next.
The Lars Larson Show. Donald Trump with a warning to Hamas at the Republican Jewish Coalition Conference.
If you spill a drop of American blood, we will spill a gallon of yours.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program. It's a pleasure to be with you on a Tuesday. And the big news, as I mentioned in the commentary, is that Governor Tina Kotek has finally seen her way clear to sign that massive emergency tax increase of more than $4 billion. And she did it late because I believe she wanted to block the voters from putting this on the ballot and voting on it because she knows to a fair certainty what they're going to do. They're going to vote it down. So I thought we'd talk about that with Representative Ed Deal. He represents the 17th district in the House in the state of Oregon. Hey, Representative Deal, welcome back.
Great to be with you, Lars.
Do you think there's any other explanation as to why Tina Kotek would wait more than 40 days after the bill passed before she signed it?
No, there's really no other reason. And she didn't present any other reason. And I really think it's a very cynical move on her part. Every day she delayed is one less day that the Oregon people have to weigh in and have a say on this bill. And they've already spoken. We know they overwhelmingly oppose these tax and fee increases. But we're committed to getting it on the ballot, Lars.
Well, I got to tell you something. I'm going to blame the people in my old business. When I was a reporter, I would have loved, and I would like to talk to Governor Kotek. We've invited her on the program any number of times. And all I'd ask her is, if you claim that you're a Democrat, and that's what she claims, and that you believe in democracy, she's constantly saying that we have to protect democracy from the predations of Donald Trump and that sort of thing. Say, why don't you want people to vote on this? And I think the only answer is she knows the people voted down. Well, if you're the governor and you're there to represent the best interests of the people of your state, and the majority of the people in your state, according to the polls, strongly oppose this tax increase, how in the world can a person who calls herself a Democrat then say, I'm a Democrat, but I'm not going to let the people of my state vote on this because they'll vote it down, and then I'll have to go back and live within the means of the state that it already has?
I agree with you. I think it's outrageous. And there's Democrats in the legislature that also agree. And they wrote letters to her urging her to go ahead and sign this thing. And she didn't. And she waited almost until the very end. And so I think that the, you know, people are upset about the tax increase, right? Lars, they're upset about that.
Yep.
But I think they're equally outraged about the behavior and the fact that they made it very well known during the legislation that they did not agree with this, that they want an ODOT that's accountable for the money that they're already getting. And the governor and the legislature ignored the people and went ahead and did this anyway. And that is simply unacceptable. And that's why we have the referendum process in the first place.
By the way, the latest developments on the IBR representative deal are that the interstate bridge is looking closer and closer to failure every single day. Because the guy in charge, Johnson, has announced he's leaving. The numbers that they keep slimming down on the light rail that they're using as, you know, that's the real purpose, is to build the light rail. I don't think they care if a bridge gets built or not, but the bridge is an excuse to build light rail. The federal funding isn't there. The state funding isn't there. They haven't even finished the environmental markup and all the rest of that stuff that is required by law. They don't have the approval from the Coast Guard required by law. And the reason I bring the IBR up, they've spent almost $300 million between the two states and the federal government on a project that looks like it's already a dead man walking, but they have other monies that are committed to it that could be, when that project dies the second time, they can bring those monies back into ODOT and still supply the services that ODOT used as the extortion to force the special session, the legislature, saying, if you don't give us money, we're not going to plow the snow, we're not going to maintain the roads. And again, that's Tina Kotek's agency, and she could have said, you folks have screwed up so many projects, the Abernathy Bridge and others, I'm going to punish you, people are going to get fired. To your knowledge, has anybody been fired at ODOT?
Not to my knowledge, and there should be some changes in leadership at the top, absolutely. And that bridge, you know, I mean, the budget is looking like a $9 or $10 billion bridge. That bridge could be built for $3 billion.
Yep.
Not all of that is state money, but a decent chunk of it is, and that could be allocated toward maintenance. The same stories with the Rose Quarter project. That has ballooned into, you know, over a $1 billion project when it could be done for significantly less money. And it's just a matter of priorities, Lars. And that's what we've been saying all along, is people prioritize maintenance. And why doesn't the legislature and the governor prioritize maintenance when it comes to ODOT funding?
So I want your prediction. Will this group, I mean, because it sounds like the group, and I've been putting out their website, it's notaxor.com, notaxor.com. Can they get the signatures together in the remaining 45 days or so?
I am confident that we can, Lars. That's a group that I started, and it's awesome to have co-chief petitioners Bruce Starr and Jason Williams with taxpayers also fighting and working for this. But we have signed up to date, I just checked, 3,700 volunteers. They have gone to that site. They have signed up to volunteer and help. Now, what I've been telling people, 2,000 of those volunteers, if we get them 50 signatures each. That's an afternoon. That's an afternoon of signature gathering. There is no reason we can't complete this in a 30-day window. 100,000 signatures in 30 days. Heck, we could be done if we concentrated on this. We could be done in a couple weeks.
Well, I hope so that the anger that... Yeah. I'm sorry.
No, we are determined, and we have a very motivated team with an organized structure in place to make sure that they're effective and have the resources they need to make this happen.
Representative Deal, let me ask you about one other player in this, because I've seen Oregon Secretary of State going all the way back to what was it, Bill Bradbury, you know, who they play games with signature verification. And I've seen them take a lot of signatures and turn into very few. Now, I know that the organization NoTaxOR.com is going to check those signatures to make sure that there are people who are registered voters, that they're not getting duplicates and all that. Can we trust Tobias Reid to actually fairly evaluate those signatures and not try to, you know, basically push every rule to the nth to try to disqualify enough to keep it off the ballot because he's going to act to defend his fellow Democrat, Tina Kotek?
You know, I have had a number of conversations with Tobias and Secretary Reid. I do believe that he's going to be a straight shooter on this. And I think he's going to follow the law. And we are also going to do 100% validation of every line on this to make sure that they are active registered voters. And we can't check signatures, but we're also training all of our volunteers to make sure they know what to do and they know how to step the voter through the process. So I am confident that we will have some lines disqualified, but we will have more than enough signatures on there to meet our threshold.
Okay, last quick question, and that is when they get it on the ballot and when it gets voted, when does it get voted on that? Next November, a year from now?
Right. So what we did is the referendum says it'll be on the November 2026 ballot.
But in the meantime, the taxes are put on hold, right?
Right. As soon as we get the signatures, the Secretary of State has about 30 days to validate those signatures. If we have the valid number of signatures, the elements of the bill we're referring, which are the tax and registration and the doubling of the payroll transit tax, those go on hold.
And at that point, Tina Kotek is going to have to figure out plan B if she's not too busy dealing with her well-known domestic problems or maybe going on another junket to another part of the planet. Thank you, Representative Deal. Back in a moment, I'll get to your phone calls and emails. And in Washington State, their new hybrid electric ferry is down for a third time. We'll talk about that issue too. Well,
some solid advice from Senator John Kennedy.
Look, if you hate cops just because of the cops, the next time you get in trouble, call a crackhead.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Don't you just love the fact that idiot governors of Washington State, like Ferguson currently, Inslee prior to that, are just sold on the idea of having all electric or hybrid electric ferries because it might reduce a little bit of carbon output for those ferries that so many hundreds of thousands of people depend on if you live around Puget Sound. Well, the word came down today. The Wenatchee, the state's first hybrid electric ferry, taken out of service on Sunday for the third time since they put the damn thing in the water in July. The Washington State Ferry spokesperson says one of the main engines shut down twice due to a fault in what they call the overspeed protection circuit. They were able to resolve the problem later that evening, and the boat returned to service. It has now failed three different times, and it's only been in service for a few months. Great idea. Go out and get that cutting-edge technology and then put people on a boat in the middle of Puget Sound who are dependent on that technology, and it keeps on failing. Seems like they ought to go back to nice, reliable diesel engines. On that note, we'll go back to the calls. Terry Emmerich on the line. Terry, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Oh, I just wanted to make a comment, Lars, that about Lenny Wilkins passing away. And Al, you know, that was Chris Dudley's first coach when he Chris first entered the NBA.
Chris and, mentioned that yesterday, yeah.
Yes, and on Monday night, November 17th, at CJ Sports Bar on McLaughlin, we are hosting Terry Edgar's release of his new book. And there will be a meet and greet from 6 to 7, and book signing from 7 to 9. Chris Dudley will be there, and Shel Sonic will be there, and Larry Steele, and Terrell Brandon, and you, Lars, will be there also.
That's right. I told you that I would stop by, even though if you could find, I don't think you could find somebody in the Pacific Northwest who knows less about sports than I do. But I'm great. I'm glad to be in the shadow of greatness because I think a lot about all the people you've mentioned, including Chris Dudley, and that's why I encouraged him yesterday. I hope he does run for governor. The miss that was just a few years ago, you know, and sadly, Oregon got the corrupt John Kitzhaber back into office as governor, finally got rid of him when his various misdeeds with his girlfriend, who was taking advantage of the office and doing pay for play from the governor's office. But we could have had Chris Dudley. Instead, the state of Oregon ended up with John Kitzhaber, and I'd love to see Dudley run again and have him run against a real failed governor in this case of Tina Kotek.
Absolutely, absolutely. We need to turn our state around, and we need to do it immediately, and we need leadership at the top that has a competitive spirit and loves Oregon and wants to bring Oregon back to the wonderful place it was before we had this years and years of a Democratic rule in Salem.
By the way, let me ask you something, because I didn't know Lenny Wilkins, but you did know Lenny Wilkins, didn't you?
Yes, I did. Yes, I did. I had the pleasure of meeting Lenny.
How is it that there are so few people like him who both played and coached? I mean, I understand that playing the game may not necessarily give you the wherewithal to be a coach, but he's one of only, what, five or six people in NBA history who've actually done both, played the game and coached the game. And I don't know if there's anybody who's done it both times as well as a player and a coach as he did in his career. But I would think there'd be more players who'd say, yeah, I want to have a career as a coach later on. Why do you think that doesn't happen more?
It should. Because nobody knows better than somebody that's lived the experience. Our interim coach has been doing a great job with the Blazers, and it's a sad situation, all the changes, and nobody knows how this all came to be. But, Portland has suffered through a lot of different drama and a lot of different changes, and I just want nothing but the best for our state and for our Trailblazers. Because, you know, having the Trailblazers here is very important to the state of Oregon.
No, and let's not see them leave. Although, Terry, I'm going to be tough when it comes to whether they talk about subsidies from government, because I think it's a profit-making business. The NBA is worth a lot of money. I think that they should pay for their own arenas. And in fact, there are arenas that were paid for by the teams in multiple major league sports. And I don't see any reason not to have the team pay for the, if they're going to make a big pile of money on the team, I'd like to see them, you know, pay for their own venue. Would you agree?
Absolutely. Any business that locates here, we come here because of our livability of our climate. Unfortunately, we have quite a problem with ODOT not building highways and not building a road for the last 35 years, but planning to do something and nothing happens. We are completely congested, and we need a leadership role where our ODOT works for the people of Oregon, not for everybody that's going to walk or ride bikes. And we need to move traffic. We need to move commerce, and we need to build the infrastructure. It's a shame when you go to other cities, San Antonio, Houston, Dallas, the road system is tremendous. It moves traffic. It moves commerce. We are completely gridlocked, and we need great leadership at the top to bring this state back to the promise that it once gave, that it was going to be livability and flow of traffic, not all the light rail not all of the bike lanes that take up the lanes that we need to move merchandise and commerce on.
That's right. That's Terry Emmer. Terry, thank you very much. You got the Lars Larson.
Please, ladies and gentlemen. You ready for the big show? In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
Is the Lars Larson Show.
President Trump is one badass president. He secured the border at a level we've never seen before.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
For our country and for our children, the best is yet to come.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
He is an existential threat to democracy.
Here's your host.
Quiet, please.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm glad to get your phone calls and emails. You know, we always talk about politicians being able to clean up a problem. Well, imagine this. Some of the politicians who actually run the second biggest city in the Pacific Northwest, they want to dirty up the city and do it deliberately because they say it'll save money. Now, I think this is colossally stupid, but then again, colossally stupid generally describes, I think, most of the members of the new and improved and much, much larger 12-member Portland City Council. Now, I said that. I'm not going to insist that John DiLorenzo join me in that very blunt criticism of the crazy 12 that now run Portland, because the city's voters decided five members of a city council can't make good decisions, so we think we'll get better decisions if we just increase the number of city councilors from 5 to 12 and pay extra millions of dollars so they can all have staff members and everything else. But they're actually proposing to do this. They want to trash up the city. John, welcome back to the program.
Hi, Lars. How you doing, man?
I'm doing very well, better than the city of Portland will be if they cut dramatically. And I think these, I want to share the numbers because I brought you on, John, and I want to explain to everybody. John's an attorney. John won. He usually wins his court cases. I think he has a win-loss record that's very enviable. But he won a case in which he sued on behalf of disabled people, saying to the Portland City Council, the city of Portland, hey, you're allowing the streets to become so trashed up that people who are disabled, they're visually impaired, they're physically impaired, they can't even walk down a sidewalk because of the tents and the tarps and the garbage and the needles and the human waste and everything else. You have to clean this up. Now, you won that case, right?
We did. We settled very advantageously, and part of that settlement resulted in a commitment by the city to have minimum expenditures to keep sidewalks clear of tent encampments. You know, I wanna tell you that your criticism of the council, I don't buy it for all 12, but for at least five, I do, and that's because the Democratic Socialists, who make up at least four or maybe five of the members, want to decimate the very business community and property ownership community that pay the taxes. And they want to leave suffering, those suffering from mental illness and drug addiction, on the street. Their ideology, Lars, does not allow them to acknowledge that the truth on homelessness is that it has little to do with the rent and everything to do with untreated drug addiction and mental illness. Otherwise, rent relief programs would help, but they don't. We are spending more and more and more money, and the homeless situation is getting worse. And you know, if you went to a doctor and got a prescription, and the medicine made you worse and worse and worse, you would at least throw the medicine away and probably get a new doctor. I think that's what we need here. Now, we're going to watch.
And John, I want people to understand the scope of this problem. In one city, they are now picking up more than 1 million pounds of hazardous garbage, meaning needles mixed in with feces, mixed in with rotten food, mixed in with junk and garbage and sharp things and everything else. 1 million pounds a month, 12 million pounds a year. And now the city council says, hey, that's too expensive. We want to cut it back dramatically and leave the garbage on the streets?
Well, it's just absolutely amazing. So what I'm going to do is We're going to watch this very closely. There's, I think, over 70 or 80 people outraged who are signing up to testify. And if this thing passes, we're going to protect our ADA plaintiffs. We're going to hold the city to their contract or minimum expenditures. And if it interferes with other people with disabilities being able to pass along on the streets, we'll sue them again. But I have to tell you, there is one irony about this democratic socialist approach. And that is that, as you'll recall, a democratic socialist city councilor's house went up in flames recently.
Yep.
And I feel really bad about that. But, you know, the fire department concluded that the fire was not political. It was started by a homeless person. And if the city had been more aggressive in enforcing its anti-camping ordinances, her house would not have burnt down. That is quite an irony, I think.
I think you're absolutely right. And frankly, John, it made me ashamed that this woman, Candace Avalos, was allowing a GoFundMe to go out and raise thousands of dollars for her. And I thought, she pulls down a salary of more than $10,000 a month from the city of Portland. She gets generous benefits and staff and all the rest of that nonsense, plus more than $10,000 a month. And I thought, somebody making that kind of scratch should have insurance that will cover her car. I know it would still be terrible to have your home burn or part of your home burn and your vehicle burn because you'd have to go about replacing them. But it's not as though she's hard up for cash, and yet she allowed folks to go out and do this GoFundMe. It'd be like doing a GoFundMe for me. I make a healthy income. I have insurance. And I thought she would come out and immediately reject this and say, look, folks, I'm covered. I get well paid. I've got lots of insurance and I'm all covered up. But she allowed them to do that. And like you said, she's part of the problem, is that they will not address this problem.
It's not like doing one for you. You're not a public official. She is. You know, the Oregon ethics laws prohibit people who may have an interest in legislation from providing gifts to public officials. And as far as I know, nobody's checked this GoFundMe deal with the Oregon Ethics Commission. But I guess, you know, ethics laws are just for business people and property owners. They're not for democratic socialists. So we'll see how that transpires.
Well, ask Shamia Fagan, ask Tina Kotek, ask Kate Brown, ask all these other people that got bags of weed cash and things like that, and nothing happened. Ask them when they took illegal campaign donations, stolen money from FTX, and the attorney general, who's also a Democrat, said, we don't need to prosecute these people. I mean, the problems are everywhere. But when they talk about leaving as much as 4 million pounds of biohazard materials on the streets, this is going to hurt your clients, isn't it?
Absolutely. We're not going to let them do it. So hopefully your listeners will join with many others who are just outraged about this proposal, and we'll either file some testimony or go to City Hall tomorrow and just say enough is enough. This is just a crazy prescription. We need a new doctor.
And imagine this, John, you're right. The last 2 years, the city and the county have spent $725 million a year for 2 years in a row, and the homeless population has grown by 61%. And now, as you say, the Democrat socialists, socialism has always been deadly to people who live in socialist countries. I mean, ask the people who used to live in Russia or China or any other place, it's socialist-ridden. And now they're going to leave trash laying on the streets and wipe out the business community. And at some point, they will run out of other people's money. That is John DiLorenzo. He wins more than he loses. He's an attorney who represented disabled people who said, clean up the streets. And John says they're going to hold the city to account on that. Glad to have you with me and always glad to take your calls. In a moment, got to talk about this Supreme Court case in which they're trying to decide whether 16 American states can keep on counting mail ballots that arrive after Election Day. We'll get to that next.
Constantine Kissin on Hamas.
For years now, many of us have been warning that the barbarians are at the gates. We were wrong.
They're inside. There are positives as well. I mean, say what you want about Hamas supporters. At least they know what a woman is.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. And the U.S. Supreme Court is hearing a case that will decide whether or not states can keep on counting mail-in ballots that arrive after Election Day. And I will tell you what I hope they do. I don't actually get a read on whether or not the Supreme Court is more likely to say yes to that or say no to that. But I think it's going to be good if the U.S. Supreme Court decides, no, you cannot count the ballots that come in after Election Day. And I'll give you my details as why I believe that. And I'll also tell you some of the details of the case that is being argued right now by the Republican National Committee, arguing that Congress said, we have an Election Day. It is one Election Day, especially for members of Congress and for the President of the United States. That is the day. Now, if we could get ourselves all the way back to in-person poll voting with identification, photo ID, I would be a happy guy. But if we could just get back to saying you get the chance to vote in an election and you can't vote if your ballot shows up after Election Day. But there are 16 of the 50 states, 58 if you're an Obama voter, who believe that you can keep on counting those ballots for a long, long time after Election Day. And I find that idea absolutely outrageous. Glad to get your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. If you're a naysayer, we put you right to the head of the line. We love naysayers on this program. But come prepared with your best argument and a willingness to take a couple of questions from me. But you can also vote in our X poll. You'll find the X poll at Lars Larson Show on X. You'll also find it on my website at LarsLarson.com. And you can send emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. I get a lot of naysayers by email. Sometimes people are a bit shy about saying something on the radio, so they'd rather say it in writing, and that's okay as well. But here's what the Supreme Court has decided to weigh in on. And they will make the decision that should set the rule for the entire United States of America. Since the U.S. Supreme Court, when it makes a decision, that decision applies to every single part of the United States of America. Now, I will say parenthetically, there are a number of these junior league federal judges, the ones that were appointed for life, and they don't have to feel responsible to anybody. They're not really accountable. They can be removed with great difficulty. You can impeach a federal judge. It very rarely happens, although it has happened from time to time. Those junior league judges, they seem to think that their decisions also apply to the entire country. I would tend to disagree with them, but I think the Supreme Court is going to set this out. So, should ballots be counted only until Election Day, or should ballots that trickle in even 5 or 7 days after the election be counted as well? Now, I know that I'm going to hear from somebody who says, well, but Lars, what about the postmark? And I would ask you this. When it comes to something as important as an election, are you willing to trust a postmark? A postmark that can be faked, a postmark that is put on by one of the most inefficiently run organizations in America, and that is the U.S. Postal Service, which is an independent government agency that over the last 40 years hasn't even been able to successfully pay its own bills. Let's start with this. Election Day set by Congress, the Tuesday after the first Monday in the month of November, and for presidential elections every 4 years on the Tuesday after the first Monday in November. But is that a real deadline? Well, the case is called Watson versus Republican National Committee. And what it has to do with is the state of Mississippi, where a complaint was filed about a law passed by Mississippi that would allow ballots postmarked on or before Election Day to be counted up to 5 days after the election. Now, what that means is that if the election falls on that Tuesday after the Monday in November, they could arrive as long as the next Tuesday and still be counted as long as the postmark fits the criteria. The Libertarian Party of Mississippi has also filed lawsuit. There are similar laws in at least 30 states. And I find it outrageous because, number one, I don't like vote by mail. I don't think there's a chain of evidence, which means that a ballot is sent out by the elections officials. It goes through the U.S. mail system. It may or may not arrive at the proper address. I mean, we've all had mail that went to the wrong address. And when it arrives there, who do you know that has their hands on that ballot? Well, the answer is you don't have any idea who has that ballot in their hands. And yet, if it gets marked and it gets returned, then it gets counted. Now, you have 3 weeks in most states to return that mail ballot. It arrives about 3 weeks before the election. You have 3 weeks to get it in. And then people are going to say, oh, but it took me all 3 weeks to be able to get that ballot and get it down to the elections headquarters. Well, when I vote on election day, because I like voting on election day, I mark my mail ballot, and then Tina and I jump in the car, and we drive to the county elections headquarters, and we hand our ballot in. We do not put it in the U.S. mail. We put it right to the people who are going to count it. Most people do not. So, is that a system that is reliable enough? Well, the suit filed by the Republicans says Congress established one uniform national day to elect members of Congress and to appoint presidential electors. And then the state of Mississippi says, no, we can count ballots that come up to 5 business days after Election Day. I don't think state law gets to trump federal law, to put it plainly. Let's go to Terry. Hey, Terry, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind?
Hi, Lars. Gosh, I've listened to you for decades.
I'm sorry to hear that. Did I say something to offend you?
No, I've listened to you forever. I'm totally in agreement that mail-in ballots should be in on Election Day. However, with one exception, and that would be the military votes from overseas. Because I remember one time, they're predominantly conservative votes. One time they just happened to get held up. You know, something happened. You know what I mean? And I was just like, you know, so I think given the importance of our military personnel and that potential, theirs should be allowed to be counted.
I have no problem with that, Terry. If you want to have exceptions like that, I'd be perfectly willing to do it. But to make that exception, what are we saying about a person who says, I got my ballot 3 weeks ago, 3 weeks before Election Day, and then I didn't bother to mark it until Election Day, and then I got it postmarked late on Election Day, and it didn't actually arrive in the elections headquarters until a week later? Is that a person that you say, well, that's okay. They voted, in effect, they voted on Election Day, but their ballot didn't arrive. You know, I remember what used to happen with poll voting. If you said, oh, the election was yesterday, I missed it. Well, then that's your fault. You know, and I would agree with you. When it comes to the military, make some exceptions because it does take a long time for the ballots to get to foreign lands and then get to the individual service member, get marked and be sent back. But I would imagine most of those military ballots probably do come in on time, but make an exception, but just for them. Is that fair?
Yeah, and those the people who say that they voted on the day, well, usually they're warned to get their vote in the mail like previously. Oh my gosh, I let the other dog.
No, back. I understand. You got my dog's a Democrat as well. All they do is eat and bark and eat and bark. It's really annoying, but we do love our dogs. Democrats, maybe not so much.
The Lars Larson Show. Ronald Reagan knew better. Do you?
All of it began the first time some of you who know better and are old enough to know better let young people think that they had the right to choose the laws they would obey as long as they were doing it in the name of social protest.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. Millions of Americans rely on health insurance during life or death moments. But are some insurers playing games with both Medicare and patient care as well? I thought we'd talk about that with Katie Talento, who's Executive Director of the Alliance of Health Sharing Ministries. Katie, welcome back to the program. How are you?
Great. Thanks so much for having me, Lars.
So tell me about this. America's health insurance industry really needs to get a strong going through by the federal government or by somebody. I'm not sure patients and clients of the health insurance industry are capable of getting it done. So what would the Alliance suggest?
Well, the first thing we suggest is consider opting out of insurance and choosing a healthcare sharing ministry which is a non-insurance option for Christians and other people of faith. But, I mean, ultimately, I think there are a lot of policy changes that are on the table and that need to be on the table. You know, Lars, there are the majority of people who declare bankruptcy are declaring bankruptcy because of medical bills, and the majority of them are insured. So it's sort of like this is a solution that we were told, that we were sold, was going to protect us from catastrophic financial ruin. That's what insurance is supposed to be insuring you from. And so that's not happening anymore. And I mean, people start to view their insurer like the cable company. I mean, everyone's so miserable. United Healthcare denies 1 in 5 claims. I mean, it's just, it's a miserable experience, and it's bankrupting America.
You know what I wish we'd gone to? And Katie, I said this at the time they were discussing Obamacare, and I think there's a way to get to that. The best insurance for everybody in America would be to start with a catastrophic plan. Say, if I have a medical catastrophe, I get cancer, I have a heart attack, some major car wreck, and the other driver is an uninsured illegal alien, so they're not going to pay my medical bill, I'd like insurance for that. And I think before Obamacare, that kind of catastrophic coverage was available for a very, very small price. I mean, tiny amounts of money, less than $100 in most cases. And then as to the other garbage that they loaded on with Obamacare, where it was almost as though they said, you have to have this Cadillac plan. You have wellness visits that an awful lot of people don't even bother to use, but they still get paid for. It'd be like having full coverage insurance for everything on your car. You know, whereas most people would say, no, what I want to be covered for is the really, really bad stuff, liability in the case of an accident. If my car is totaled, maybe I'd like to get my car replaced. But other than that, I don't need all the other extras that can be added on. Except in the case of Obamacare, we were told you have to have all the extras, whether you want them or not, whether you're going to use them or not. And guess what? Somebody else, some taxpayer you've never met, is going to pay the bill. And what a lot of the people who were in favor of Obamacare didn't realize was that somebody who's going to pay the rest of the bill was just you. I mean, in most cases, just other Americans are going to pay the bill, and you're going to get a plan that you didn't want that also didn't cover the things you really needed to keep you out of, say, going bankrupt when a gigantic medical bill comes in. Am I on the right track or not?
You're 100% on the right track. I mean, nobody calls up Geico to get an oil change, you know? So I think that's exactly right. And the really, I think, unseen problem that's driving up premiums and driving up deductibles and that's really fleecing the American people are these hidden middlemen and these hidden business models in the insurance industry that people don't know about or they maybe have heard about, like pharmacy benefit managers. And these are like shadowy middlemen who, you know, the value prop of insurers, especially for, say, employers or the government, is we're going to go out, we're going to get you volume discounts on healthcare from hospitals and doctors. We're going to get volume discounts for you that you yourself. That's the whole value prop here, right?
Yep.
And, you know, what ends up happening is they start buying up the providers. They start buying up the doctors. They start buying up the pharmacy, you know, benefit managers that are supposed to actually be adversarial. You know, it's sort of like the buyers and the sellers are coming together to screw the customers. And that's not how it's supposed to be. They're supposed, these middlemen are supposed to be on one side or the other, right? That are getting something good for both of them. But instead, you know, these insurers are really just in secret contracts with hospitals. And yet we, the patients, the buyers, the employers, the government taxpayers who are paying for healthcare, we're not party to any of these secret contracts, but we're bound by their terms. And because of that, there's no one who's looking out for us. They're looking out for each other in these contracts. These contracts advantage them, the party to the contract, not us paying for them.
Well, and in fact, Katie, think about this. I'll go back to the car insurance model, and I know people are going to say, Lars, health insurance is not car insurance. But you remember when there was a time when the insurance companies could say to you, and you must get your car fixed at this shop because we have a good deal with that shop. And then along came state laws saying, no, if your car is busted, you get to have it fixed, and you can choose who you want to have fix it. And it's your choice, not the choice of your insurance company. And most people, the car shops, will all remind you of that, saying you don't have to get it shopped, fixed where they want it fixed. Oh, and by the way, you're entitled to original parts if you want to have original equipment parts, or you can have aftermarket parts, whatever deal you want to work out. So it gave people the choice to be consumers and to say, oh, I've got, you know, I have a problem, a busted car. I need to get it fixed. I get to choose the place to go to. Except in health insurance, correct me if I'm wrong, if you say, somebody's sick in my family, let's run them to the hospital. Oh, no, let's stop first and check and find out if that hospital or that clinic is in network or out of network. Are they covered this way? Are they covered that way? So you're supposed to stop in the middle of all that and figure out which place is my insurance company going to, you know, honor, and which place is my insurance company to say, oh, you got fixed at the wrong hospital. We're not going to pay the bill.
Yeah, and it's worse than that even, because lots of times people will, they'll choose, say, an in-network hospital for their surgery, but then surprise, they find out that the guy who puts them to sleep with anesthesiology is out of network, and the pathologist who reads the biopsy from their, the slides from their biopsy is out of network. Surprise! And so Congress had to step in to prevent that kind of shenanigan from going on. It's really bad, and it's even worse for employers, because let's say an employer is contracting with Blue Cross Blue Shield or Aetna, you know, to deliver a health plan for their employees. Well, that employer, like a Walmart or a Google, or even just your, you know, your Main Street mom and pop business, they're not allowed to go their own contract, to enter into their own contract with that hospital down the street in their own community, where they might be able to get a better deal than Blue Cross got for them. Or else Blue Cross, if they do that, Blue Cross will fire them or say that they're, you know, accuse them of breaching their contract. It's so anti-competitive. It should be illegal.
Well, and in fact, it should be under the antitrust laws. So you believe that the Trump administration, under the Make America Healthy Again agenda, is actually going to do some of this woodshedding of the industry. Am I right?
Well, I mean, I've never seen tweets from the president like this. And I used to work for him on health care once upon a time during the Obamacare repeal and replace days. And he wasn't, you know, I'm so excited to see what he's tweeting about. So he's been tweeting about, you know, hey, we need to stop giving all these handouts to insurers, which is what the subsidies on Obamacare are. They're just handouts, writing checks to insurers. And we need to give them directly to people in their own health savings account, which is a brilliant solution and definitely what we should be doing. And let's say that you get, if you qualify for subsidies today on Obamacare, or you qualify for Medicaid, what if you got that same amount of money and it was put into a health savings account and you could go buy any kind of insurance or a healthcare sharing ministry membership or no insurance at all, and you could just pay cash for your healthcare? I mean, it would be amazing, and people would really flock to that, and it would create this competitive marketplace that we've all been sort of dying for, waiting for price competition to come. But nobody gets price competition because all the prices are secret, and you have to go in network anyway.
Exactly. That's Katie Talenta, who's the executive director of the Alliance of Healthcare Sharing Ministries. Katie, thanks very much. Back in a moment. We'll get to your phone calls and emails. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest.
Told, Lars has welcomed naysayers for 27 years, but occasionally...
Who is this person who speaks to me as though I needed his advice?
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you on a Tuesday, and we're live on the Radio Northwest Network. This is the network that has been around now for 27 years, and we serve the Pacific Northwest states of Oregon, Washington, and Idaho. This segment of the show is brought to you by NickShivers.com for an instant offer to sell your home immediately. No showings, no hassles, and you get to pick the closing date. NickShivers.com for details. On our poll today, is this the America of 2025, the same country that veterans of our biggest wars fought for? I would answer no to that. I was inspired to ask that X-poll question today by the testimony of an World War II veteran, quite old, who just said, we fought for this country and many of us died. He lived. and came home, and he's quite old now. And he says, this is not the country that we fought for. We never thought that it would become what it has become. So is America of 2025 the country that veterans of our biggest wars fought for? My answer is no. You can answer the question any way you like. You'll find it at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com, and brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at UltimateTruckService.com. Let me go first to Gil. Hey, Gil, welcome to the program. What's on your mind? Hey, Gil. I think Gil may have given up, but that's all right. Gil, thanks very much. Better luck next time, maybe First Amendment Friday. In any case, 866-439-5277. If you're a naysayer, well, you can always go right to the head of the list by just telling us that you disagree with something we've talked about on the show. I do want to mention this. Katie Wilson now officially leads Bruce Harrell in the Seattle mayoral race by 91 votes out of about 300,000 ballots counted. Now, it's been a week since Election Day, and yet they still do not have a firm decision on which candidate won. And Bruce Harrell was ahead, and now it looks like he's behind by about 91 votes. And you say, well, Lars, that's the way elections go. Wilson was originally down by 7 points or 10,000 votes last Tuesday. That deficit has now been cut down, and she now barely leads by about 100 votes. She is the Democrat socialist who is running for mayor. So as bad as Bruce Harrell has been, I would argue, and I argued this before Election Day, even though I'm not a Seattle voter, that Katie Wilson is even worse. Now, here's the question. Is this going to be recounted? And does that actually make any difference whatsoever? And I would argue that it does not. And let me tell you why. I've used this example before, but think of ballots as like dollar bills. If I owe you $50 and I say I'd like to pay my debt, and I hand you 50 $1 bills in a stack, and I encourage you to count that stack of 50 $1 bills, and you count them, and you say, you're right, here's $50. And I say, now, some of those bills, I'm going to tell you right here, are counterfeit bills. They aren't real. You know, like ballots that have been marked by somebody who's not a voter, or somebody who's marked more than one ballot, or somebody who's marked a ballot even though they don't live in Seattle. They may not even live in the state of Washington, or they may have marked four or five different ballots, so those ballots are invalid. If you tell the person who just counted those 50 bills and confirm that that's $50, that some of those bills are counterfeit. They're not real. Now, he doesn't know or she doesn't know whether there's one phony bill or 10 phony bills. They don't even know if all 50 of the bills are phony. All they know is that they have 50 bills in their hand. Some are counterfeit. Some are real. So you encourage them to count that stack four or five more times. If that person is a sensible person, they're going to say, it doesn't matter how many times I count it, because if some of those bills are not real, then the count is always going to come up as 50, but I don't know how many dollars are there. There may be $0. There could be $5 or $10 or $20, or there could be $49 because you've told me that one of them is counterfeit. That's what we're up against when it comes to things like the bad balloting system we have in vote by mail. You don't know if those votes are real. And you know that some of them are phony. And how do we know that in both Washington and Oregon? Because we know there have been documented cases in both states where foreign nationals, non-citizens, have cast ballots in elections. Tony Golick, the prosecutor in Clark County, had a case just like that. And the woman who cast those ballots admitted, I'm a foreign national, I have no right to vote, I am registered to vote, and I have cast votes in a number of elections. And then the prosecutor said, I'm not going to prosecute you. And why? Because the people behind this system, mostly on the Democrat Party side, I don't know of any Republicans who believe in that kind of nonsense, they know that a system in which you can fake votes benefits them. So even when, and I suspect this is going to be the result, that Katie Wilson, I expect, is going to be declared the winner of the Seattle mayor's race. Now, that we'll be told that she won by 90 votes or 200 votes or 500 votes, whatever the number is. you know that some of those ballots are fake. And how do we know they're fake? Because we know that foreign nationals are voting in our elections. We know that illegal aliens have voted in elections in Oregon and not been prosecuted by the Democrats in charge of the system. And we know that there have been votes that are false votes cast in Washington state as well. And we know that the prosecutors will not prosecute. In that case, you can't trust the system, and Seattle might just end up with a completely untrustworthy Democrat socialist mayor.
The Lars Larson.
Quiet, please.
Ladies and gentlemen.
You ready for the bit show?
In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
Lars. This is the Lars Larson Show.
President Trump is one badass president. He secured the border at a level we've never seen before.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
For our country and for our children, the best is yet to come.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
He is an existential threat to democracy.
Here's your host.
Quiet, please.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. And I think here in the Pacific Northwest, we are going to run up hard against a brick wall when it comes to electric production in the Northwest. And why is that happening? Because we have people in both Oregon and Washington, to a lesser extent, Idaho, in the official ranks, you know, the governors, the state legislatures, that have all decreed that we're going to electrify everything we possibly can. Whether the citizens of the Northwest like that or not, you're going to drive electric cars. We're going to invite AI data centers and other kinds of data centers, and a growing population that gobbles up a lot of electric power. And there is supposed to be an obligation on the part of government to make sure that the mix of private utilities, privately owned companies that supply electric power, and the publicly owned utilities, PUDs and such, that they actually have sufficient supply so that when we've got a dry water year, or we've got a cold winter or a hot summer, that we have enough electricity to get by. Well, one of the people sounding the alarm on this is State Senator Matt Behnke from Kennewick, who's suggesting we are, as soon as next year, going to run into a major gap in energy. And Senator Behnke, welcome to the program. And if I've misstated your position, by all means, correct me.
No, thanks, Lars, for having me. That's exactly right. And first, I want to thank all the veterans on Veterans Day for all their sacrifice, what they've done. We're in a crisis, frankly, Lars. Over the next couple of years, we're looking at a 9-gigawatt shortfall. At best, that's 3 in the state of Washington, and we're trying to get things built. And what's happening is there's so much red tape, so much agency bureaucracy that we can't even get anything built in the Northwest. We're looking at these shortfalls coming up in the next month or two as we get into the winter weather season. And we've had in the last couple of years of these blackouts, brownouts, and areas that are really critical resources we need to get to our citizens so we don't have anybody who's out left in the cold.
Well, so what do we need to do to wake people up about this? And I've got one suggestion that could be made, and that is we continue to see data centers built in the Northwest, both Oregon and Washington, and the local communities love them. Because they come in, they spend a lot of money, they put a lot of infrastructure on the ground, and of course the county that they're located in ends up with a big bunch of tax revenue, not to mention the jobs of actually building the data centers. Once they're up and operating, they really don't employ that many people. In fact, I know of at least one data center where the technicians who actually run it might number a couple of dozen, and the security force is actually much bigger than the force of people who actually work making sure that all the, you know, the ones and zeros fly in and out of those data centers. But those things are a disaster when it comes to energy, because there are estimates that they might burn up as much as the estimate I saw was up to 30% of the power in the region in the next decade or so. I tried telling that to one of your colleagues from the state legislature. It was a young lady whose name escapes me now. And she said, oh, no, they're only eating up about 6%. I said, it's 6% now, but it's forecast to go as high as 30%. What are we going to do when we run out? So I would suggest that some of your colleagues, even the ones on the Republican side of the aisle, may be a little bit uninformed when it comes to, well, how much are they chewing up, and do we have the energy to supply it? I'd like to know what you think.
That's correct. We got to get the word out and primarily educate and make people aware of what these issues really are. And to your point, it does grow. We're seeing efficiencies in some of the new data centers, improvements as they've modified and they've updated to these new chips that you're hearing about with NVIDIA, and even the slight streams where we can work with advanced nuclear power. We're seeing these partnerships that come online that we can have your build your own device where that advanced nuclear power could be co-located with that data center and allow us that opportunity to have some of that grid reliability, the resource they need to be there. But you're exactly right. A lot of my peers, a lot of my coworkers across the aisle and, of course, across the state, they're not even seeing this as an issue. We think we have a bigger crisis than other places. I'm just trying to shout the alarm to get everybody on board, get this information to people, and hopefully we can act now before it gets too late.
Well, and in fact, Senator Behnke suggested these are the numbers you need to pay attention to. The region by next year, 2026, is looking at a gap of 1,300 megawatts. So 1.3 gigawatts, we're going to be short of power. And you say, well, what happens when we fall short? We hit that day where low stream flows or low water levels behind the hydro dams combined with very cold temperatures mean that everybody turns their thermostat up. And all of a sudden, some region of the Northwest, I didn't say the country, but of the Northwest, some region has to be told your power is going to go off for several hours. Is it going to come down to that as soon as this winter?
It is. And we've already got put processes in places with our utilities. They're looking at contingency operations right now when those emergency threat vectors come in play, that decisions are going to be made with our local communities across the Northwest and specifically Washington State on when we're going to shut those things down, when we're going to power down our cities, our counties, and other manufacturing to make sure we have power to keep the grid going. We're in a crisis right now, Lars, and I appreciate you taking the time to share this with your listeners. I just hope they reach out to me and others to try to get more people involved to raise this to the governor's level. Governor Ferguson is putting out a new energy strategy, and we're hurting because it's not even effective in that strategy. I'm trying to push this to the highest levels we possibly can.
Okay, I've got two suggestions. One is, what if the legislature said to all these communities, usually they don't build the data centers in the high population areas, they build them in the rural areas because they can get the water, they can get the land cheap, they can get the power cheap, and they do provide some jobs. So tell them there's a moratorium on any new construction of data centers until we get the power problem fixed. That would not be unreasonable any more than it is when a region says, you know, we've hit the limit on septic, we've hit the limit on water, we've hit the limit on something else, and we're not going to issue any more building permits, especially for these high-power consumers, until you fix the problem. That would get their attention. Do you think you could get your colleagues to do that?
I would be happy to run that bill right now. And as a matter of fact, we have some of that in draft with our colleagues to be on board with that. I don't think the chair of the Senate Energy and Environment Technology Committee would go for that. I think, frankly,
you could embarrass him with it,
Lars.
By the way, Senator Behnke, one other suggestion. Would it be fair to say the Seattle Metro has voted for this green power nonsense a whole lot more than the eastern side of the state of Washington?
Yes, sir. And being in the eastern Washington, 90% of the capital of the energy locations for the manufacture of energy in the Northwest.
Yeah. So I've got a suggestion. Why don't we turn off downtown Seattle? When you got to pick a region that loses its power for a few hours because we've run short because of the garbage that people right there in downtown Seattle voted for, why don't we turn their lights off? You think you could get that bill to fly at the legislature?
I definitely would not be able to get that going, Lars, but that's a great idea to at least have a better awareness and understanding how critical the nature is when you just trust that a system's going to be there. And frankly, we've had really good utility personnel for years.
And we have. That's Senator Matt Behnke. He represents the Tri-County area, well, Richland, Wesca, and West Pasco. Hey there.
new plan of action. Just mug all the Dems.
I got jumped like 5 weeks ago walking home in New York City. And when I woke up, I genuinely felt like a different person. Because I was on the floor, I was bleeding, I was concussed, and I was 100% Republican.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. And in a moment, if I get the chance, Attorney General Bondi and the FBI Director Kash Patel just dropped the Clinton corruption files on the United States Congress. What were the Clintons hiding and who helped cover them up? And how much of that ties into some of the other conspiracies that have happened in America over about the last 20 years or so? I'll get to that when I can. I want to start, though, with a naysayer, and that's Jack. Hey, Jack, welcome to the program. We love naysayers on this program, so welcome and thanks for calling. What do we disagree about that makes you a naysayer?
Well, I typically don't disagree with you, but on the 50-year mortgage...
Oh, Trump's idea, yeah.
Well, I mean, there are so many positives to it, and one I'm sure is going to change your mind.
Okay, but tell me.
All the experts, well, I'll build up to it, but all the experts say, use someone else's money. This is using someone else's money. You got to get in early. You talked about the appreciation you're going to get out of a home. The faster you get in, the sooner you get the appreciation. Most people sell in 7 years, so that it's not going to really affect them that much. You can refi when you want to. You can pay more if you want to. I mean, I got 30-year loan.
You can refi when you want to, or you can refi when the market allows you to. For example, if you were refiing in January of 21 when Joe Biden came in, the interest rate was about 2.5%. It's about 6% right now. So you can refi right now, but if you refied from that low interest rate to anything higher, it's going to cost you a lot more money. Your payment's going to be bigger. So it does present some practical problems, doesn't it?
You can, well, it could, but you can just make a bigger payment and still pay it off faster. And here's the biggest one. Maybe these people will actually, when they vote, they'll realize that their taxes are going up all the time. Maybe they'll stop voting for all this crazy crap because they think somebody else pays the taxes.
Well, that's possible. But, Jack, let me ask you, I mean, because a couple of years ago, somebody asked me, why don't we just have 40 and 50 and 60-year mortgages? And the problem is, when you go from 30 to 40 and 40 to 50, the amount you reduce the monthly payment is relatively small, in the range of 10%. So let's say you bought a house and the mortgage on a 30-year mortgage would be $2,000 a month. You know, that might be, for people of average income, $2,000 a month is acceptable, especially because you get some deductibility at tax time. But if you bump it to 40 years, you add 30% to the length of time to pay it off, you're only going to drop the payment by about 10%. So you go from $2,000 to $1,800. So that would allow some more people to get into buying a house. It might give them that extra edge where they say, I can afford $1,800. I can't afford $2,000. Okay, I get that. But you're agreeing to rent that money a lot longer. And, Jack, you know what I compare it to? Have you ever rented a piece of equipment like a backhoe or a pressure washer or anything like that?
Yep.
Do you try to keep that rental time as short as possible?
Unless I need it for like 2.5 days, then I go for the week because the week is actually cheaper than 3 days.
It's cheaper than week. But if somebody says, hey, Jack, you need a pressure washer, and you said, yeah, I'm going to go rent one for a month, and you go, no, why are you running it for that long a time? That's what I ask you about renting money, because that's really what a mortgage is. You're renting money,
right,
and you're right. It is smart to use other people's money. But if you say... my deal is so tenuous that I can only afford it if I agree to a 40-year payback. You're going to be upside down in that. You could be seriously upside down in that for a long, long time, couldn't you?
You could be, but you're putting somebody, instead of paying rent, you're at least doing something for yourself. My first home, when I bought it, if I could have bought even a couple years sooner, I would have made 30 or 40%. And I'm not saying everybody does that, but the sooner you get in, the better.
The only thing I worry about, Jack,
and you can always pay sooner. You can always pay more.
Well, if you have the money, you can pay sooner. The problem is, for example, I think the economy is going to get a lot better. The growth rate suggests that. But let's say it doesn't. And you say, well, you can always pay more. And you say, yeah, except, 6 months ago, I was doing 10 hours of overtime a week. And now I'm doing zero overtime because my company's having trouble and I might even lose my job. What do you think caused the 08 financial collapse? Because I would say the proximate cause was people buying houses who really were right on the edge of being able to afford them. And they were doing it because they said,
That was Clinton programs forcing the banks to loan that money.
Right.
I'm
except
not saying the banks should loan somebody the money.
They forced them to loan the money, but they persuaded people who really couldn't afford a house they could just barely afford it. And they thought, I can afford it because if I can hold on to this house for a year, it'll go up in value by 50 grand and I'll make bank. And then all of a sudden things reversed and all of a sudden they weren't making 50. They were upside down by 50. And that's what I'm afraid of because if you have a friend who says he's going to buy a car and you say, wow, I'm amazed that you can buy that car. It's, you know, how are you affording it? And he says, I'm getting a 96 month loan for my car. What would you tell that friend?
Obviously not to do it, but Lars can't fix stupid.
Well,
but I'm talking about for young
people
that
are stupid,
mobile,
do you?
That recently we encourage stupid all the time. But I think people that are upwardly mobile that have recent college graduates, they're going to be making more and more. Get them into a house as soon as you can. And that is one way to help do that.
Yeah. Okay. It's not a bad argument, but when I look at the numbers, and how much you're going to pay over 40 years or 50, if we went to the full 50 that Trump has been talking about. And believe me, I'm on his side 99% of the time. But on this one, I think you're going to end up encouraging people to buy houses who can barely afford them. And then if the economy takes a hiccup, and usually two things happen at once, if the economy stumbles a bit and you lose your job, plus real estate goes down at the same time for the same reasons that the economy is taking a hiccup, then all of a sudden you find yourself, I can't make the payment. I decided to make the smaller payment and stretch it out over 40 or 50 years. I have almost no equity. And you're going to see people walking away from houses because they got nothing in them.
That's why people don't have kids today. If. But if you have kids, you'll work harder. You'll be more successful. And you'll have a reason to go out there and bust your butt and get another job or keep working or get a promotion even during a downtime.
And that is a very decent naysayer argument. One of the first I've heard in a long time. Jack, thanks for the call. Let's go to JC. JC, why are you a naysayer today?
Lars, first of all, happy Veterans Day to all.
Happy Veterans Day to you as well.
Yeah, thank you. I'm a veteran. I served happily.
Thanks for your service.
H.W. Bush. Yeah, well, thank you, Lars. I really appreciate it. And I did it out of just for the country, honestly. I had no other choice at the time. Plus, I was looking to go to college, and that was my best choice. But anyways, your voting take, I don't think you're really – you get a little tongue-tied when you start talking about voting and the
– I get tongue-tied?
Voting.
Yes, all I said was there's no chain of evidence. Nobody knows who's returning that ballot.
Well, I mean, you don't have no fix because in 2020.
Yes, I do. In-person voting at the polls with picture ID, and you have a chain of custody.
And who counts the ballots?
Well, I understand that you have to have trustworthy people because the ballots are actually counted by machines. And you're right. If somebody can get in and reprogram the machines and gimmick the machines, well, then it's game over anyway. But my point is, at least find out who's sending the ballot in with a vote. Because when you say, we've got all these people voting, and some of those people are not citizens, they're not legal voters, and they're voting more than once.
The Lars Larson Show. Portland's Did you know Lars has a face for radio?
He's hideous!
Wanna see? Follow him on Instagram at The Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to The Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you and glad to get to your phone calls and emails. You know, one of the biggest attempted con jobs recently has been the Democrats over the last 42 days trying to persuade Americans through the cooperative news media that it was the Republicans that caused the government shutdown and not the Democrats with their demands for $1.4 trillion in new government spending, or they weren't going to vote vote to start the government back up. And I guess my favorite form of proof that it was the Democrats that shut it down is that the Republicans passed a bill through the House. It still had some Democrats with them on that vote. And they said, let's fund the government. And that was a yes vote. Then it got to the Senate. It got all the Republicans. It got a couple of Democrats. It even got a couple of independents. And they all said, let's vote to fund the government. And the Democrats said no, and they said the Republicans have shut the government down. And then last night, eight Democrats crossed the aisle, and they said, you know what, it's time to start the government up again. So when eight Democrats crossed the aisle over the screams and yells and wailing and gnashing of teeth from their own party, the government is now going to be funded. Or when they get to the end of a long process, it'll be funded. So who caused it? I would say the Democrats did. And yet I think they and the news media did their best to try to say this is all the fault of the Republicans. They're running the whole show. Well, David Bozell joins me now, who's president of the Media Research Center. David, welcome back to the program.
Mr. Larson, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well, David. And you know to call me Lars, but tell me this. ABC, NBC, CBS, PBS, CNN, et cetera, et cetera. They've all been running these stories that have led not a majority, but at least half of all Americans say, well, we hear this is actually the fault of the Republicans. Did they get away with persuading most Americans that the government didn't need to shut down and the Republicans could have stopped it?
Well, if you believe the reports about President Trump's breakfast the morning after the elections, in which he told the senators that Republicans are getting blamed for the shutdown and it wasn't working out for Republicans. Yes, the media were successful in convincing the American people that the Republicans were to blame. And why wouldn't they? They've been successful. 87% of all government shutdown coverage favored Democrats, with reporters issuing 83 critical statements about Republicans and just 12 critical statements about Democrats. Of the big three networks. Now, even if you isolate it within just Washington, D.C., the Capitol Hill reporter class, that is the cesspool otherwise known as the Beltway, by a factor of 2.5 to 1, 72 to 28, coverage was dominant in favor of Democrats by the Capitol Hill press corps, as it were. So when you have that kind of coverage disparity, it's no surprise that the public blames, who the press is blaming, which was Republicans. Interestingly enough, though, I just find it wild in the last 24 to 48 hours, as the Democrats have folded, that the same press who blamed the Republicans for shutting down a government are blaming Democrats for folding. I don't know how you could shut it down and fold at the same time. You can only shut it down and fold at the same time. Pardon me. You can only shut it down and fold. You can't shut it down and then be the party that won and not fold. And so they blame the Republicans, and then they blame the Democrats for folding. I haven't really understood it at all, other than just that they didn't get their precious COVID-era subsidies.
Which, by the way, when we looked at that, it was an extra, when you totaled everything up, about $1.4 trillion in new spending over the next 10 years. And that was the Obamacare expanded subsidies that were put in place with an end date of December 31 of this year, saying we need these now. I don't think they've actually needed them for some time, but they used COVID and the pandemic as an excuse to dramatically expand Obamacare because it's an emergency, but it has an end date. And there was no reason to extend it beyond that. And the Democrats have now admitted there was no reason to extend beyond that. But boy, did they want to. They wanted that extra $350 billion to flow from the U.S. government to mostly the hospital industrial complex, the healthcare folks, and say, well, why? Why do we need the COVID's been over for a while?
Well, for most of the shutdown, up until about 3 or 4 days prior to the end, when Schumer said, okay, fine, maybe we'll take a one-year extension. Most of the Democrat demands, not only did they want the subsidies extended, these COVID-era subsidies, they basically demanded that President Trump reverse the big, beautiful bill and just change his mind.
Yep.
And reinstate USAID funding and just change his mind. Basically, just undo first 8 to 10 months of his of his second administration. Just forget it happened, sir. Just give it all back to us. All that money that you cut, all the spending that you cut, all those people that you dismissed for good reasons, all those wasteful government programs, PBS, NPR, please just give it all back to us, and then we'll open up the government. I mean, these were just absurd demands. But the Obamacare subsidies were the most absurd of them all. Obamacare, as poorly as it was written, provided subsidies if you earned up to 400% above the poverty line.
Yep.
Biden increased that number from 400% to 600%. That 200% little window, 400 to 600, was what the Democrats were bellyaching about this whole time. And those were not even, this had nothing to do with anyone's employer-provided insurance, none of that. It's just people who make between 400 and 600% above the poverty line who are on the individual exchange market. That's what 40-plus days of government shutdown was all about. And it was just a silly, silly month-plus of coverage, an inaccurate, unfair, not just biased, but just sycophantic coverage in favor of the Democrats that the press would just go hook, line, and sinker and try to convince the American people that it was anything other than that. All right, and that's what they tried to do. They tried every which way to convince the country that it was anything other than 400 to 600% above the poverty line. And I'm afraid to say that they may have won this battle. They may have won this round because they did it all under the backdrop of these three state elections, New Jersey and Virginia, and some things in primaries in different places across the country, Arizona, Texas, et cetera.
I'm talking to Dave Bozell, who's president of the Media Research Center. Dave, you, in the same way that you're right, you can't just fold and say, okay, it was the other side that did it, but we folded. And yet what they folded on was saying all those demands we made, we've now, at least eight of us, have decided to cross the line, vote for the bill, and fund the government. And they still had all the other Democrats, 40 of them, who voted no to restart the government. So how can they sit back and say, we didn't cause right. this, when the crossing of the aisle of eight of them saying, okay, we'll vote to fund the government, that ended it. You know, the Republicans didn't have eight extra votes to fund the government, but the Democrats did.
Yeah.
So they're the ones who made the decision.
Right, and the eight were either not up for re-election in 2026, or they're going to be retiring anyway. So, I mean, it's just and basically, you know, most of those eight, if not all of them, are just they're going to get pushed aside by this radical element of the Democratic Party. If not now, later.
Are they going to push Fetterman aside? Do they have the guts to push Fetterman? Because I liked what he said. I'm not holding the country hostage. He even used Republican language, and God bless him for that.
He was actually on Fox in Fox and Friends this morning. He actually went into enemy territory. He's acquitted himself very well. He's not, you know, the radical. You know, he's certainly not the radical I'll confess, I thought he was going to be a radical left winger.
I thought he was as well. That's David Bozell from the MRC. David, thank you so much. Back in a moment, I'll get to your phone calls and emails. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network. Larson Show, pleasure to be with you. Glad to get to your phone calls.
You know what the Muslims call the Jews in the Quran? The children of Israel. Well, this is awkward.
Now, more truth from Lars Larson.
Hey, welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a Tuesday. It's the Radio Northwest Network. And this segment of the show is always brought to you by Oregon Medical Centers, the regenerative medical specialists at Oregon Medical Centers. Do you realize Washington State now ranks as the most expensive state in America for dining out? And you say, why is that significant? I have a feeling that Seattle is the biggest driver of that. Seattle, like Portland, has gigantically high taxes. It has gigantically high minimum wages. It has expensive requirements on businesses like restaurants. So how in the world do you not get, say, New York City or maybe Honolulu, Hawaii as the most expensive state in the nation to dine out? No, it's actually, according to King 5 News, it is the most expensive state in America to go out and get some dinner. And I suggest to you that if you keep it that way, you're going to end up with a place that has no place to go to dinner unless you happen to have a Microsoft millionaire kind of employee, a kind of paycheck. Washington State's chain restaurant prices are now the highest in the United States. Seattle also ranks above most major U.S. cities, according to King 5, with a 17% higher average menu price than the national average. And if you say, well, that's great, Lars, you should love it when all those businesses are making big bucks. Except I have a feeling the reason they have those high prices is because of the high cost of doing business in places like Seattle. Portland has the same kind of problem, except Portland has already destroyed most of its downtown, which is where you'd expect to find most of the restaurants, which means you just don't have the restaurants there, and they aren't likely to come back to that kind of environment. In any case, I'd give you something to think about. Glad to have you with me. And if you want to join the best conversation in talk journalism, it's 866-HEY-LARS. Or send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. Let's go to first to Ernest. Hey, Ernest, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Yes. There's a couple of things that a whole lot of things going through my mind as you were talking. But one of the things, the ACA, Obamacare, before Obamacare, people were going broke because of health care. The health care was out of control. Obama came in and he tried to do something to help out. It may not be perfect. He was trying to do something to help out. The Republicans didn't do anything. Now, he tried to do something to help the people, and the Republicans were trying to do things to hurt Obama. It was the exact opposite. Another thing is, Obamacare, they voted 70 times in Trump's first term to get rid of Obamacare.
I wish they'd won.
They had a lot of opportunities to implement their own health care, and as of 2025, they still don't have one.
And I will fault them, Ernest, take a breath. Mm-hmm. I will fault the Republicans for what they haven't done, too, and I have. But I'm going to ask you this. When Obamacare mm-hmm. came in, health care costs that were already rising fast began rising mm-hmm. even faster because the government mm-hmm. was pouring money into it. Do you think you mm-hmm. bring down the cost of something by having the government put hundreds of billions of dollars of subsidies into it?
Well, it doesn't matter where it comes from as long as it comes down. If it helps American people.
No, but hold on. It has not come down. I know Obama made that promise. He said, we will bring down the cost of health care. Obamacare sent the cost of health care even higher still. He also promised, with Obamacare, we will cover everybody for health insurance in America. There were about 15% of the American population that did not have a health insurance policy at the time of Obamacare. He cut that in half, maybe. But anytime you give away something free, you're going to reduce numbers, but only artificially. For instance, Ernest, if you said, I can't feed my family, and I said, okay, Ernest, I'll come over to your house tonight with two bags of groceries and your family will be fed. Have I actually solved your problem, or did I just get you fed for the evening?
Okay, but why haven't the Republicans fixed it?
Because Trump, you have to get rid of Obamacare first. Obamacare prohibits all the other reforms. Go ahead.
They voted 70 times when Trump was it. They had the House, they had the Senate, and they had the presidency. And they're doing the exact same thing now that they were doing then.
No, they're not. By the way, Ernest, they're not doing the same thing now because...
They're complaining about how bad
I know your
Obama
point of view, Ernest,
is,
but you don't want to hear
and
anything.
They don't have a plan.
Ernest, stop for a second and take a breath or I'll just go away. Ernest, almost 3 years ago, the Democrats said it's a pandemic. We need to expand Obamacare benefits for 3 years. Actually, originally it was two, now it's three. And it will run out on December 31. Now, was there a reason to expand Obamacare during the tail end of the pandemic? Maybe. Is there a reason to continue that expansion of Obamacare today? Can you say there is?
No. What I'm saying is that...
You just ignored everything I said, Ernest. Now,
I understand what you're just saying, and I know you keep trying to put it, the blame on the Obama.
No, all I'm saying is, was there a reason to expand Obamacare 3 years ago? Is that reason still present? And I think the answer is no. And apparently the Democrats have admitted there is no reason to expand it. The expansion will end on December 31, and thank God we're all going to save a lot of money.
The Lars Larson Show.